The first thing with anything, it starts with educating yourself. Any HR professional should start to educate themselves on how to use the tools, but especially on understanding that they should not abdicate to the tools. They are tools. They are not something that you can just say, do the work for you. They're going to do work as directed and as curated by you. I coined a slogan. I have a background in creative advertising. I have my way with words and I like to find slogans and puns and things like that. And came up with one last night. AI is reasonable, not rational. So the results that you get are reasonable. They sound like they are okay, but there's no rational approach. There's no rational process behind them. So you have to provide that.
Welcome to Latinx in Power, a podcast hosted by Thaisa Fernandes.
When it comes to achieving success in the world of business, there's nothing more vital than supercharging your revenue. Sales professionals do more than just close deals. They time your leads, chase leads, forecast growth, generate insightful reports, manage contacts, curate compelling content, and crush those ever-important numbers. The tasks on their plate seem never-ending. As we gear up for the fourth quarter, is the perfect time to explore a superior path to success. This journey starts with the all-new HubSpot Sales Hub. With HubSpot Sales Hub, you unlock a seamlessly integrated platform where your data, tools, and teams seamlessly converge, forging a sophisticated and highly adaptable workspace that is an absolute joy to work with. It is the place where you can effortlessly convert potential leads into active pipelines and bring deals to fruition, all from a unified hub. Plus, sequences and smooth workflows help reps streamline tasks and spend more time on what they do best, connecting with customers. With Sales Hub, closing deals is no big deal. Try it yourself at hubspot.com/sales. Welcome to Latinx in Power. Today, we are talking with Hernan Chioso. Hernan is an HR innovation leader with more than 25 years of experience in software development and product management. Serving as a lead volunteer at US Digital Response and founder of Productize HR, while mentoring graduates and startups globally and holding certification in SPHR, Scrum, and Design Thinking. Whoa, I'm so excited. Welcome, Hernan.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here. We've been talking about this for months and very glad to finally do it.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? We have been talking for a couple of months and I feel like we have been recording all this time, but we're only recording now. So it's incredible. And in this episode, Hernan discusses AI influence on HR processes. So very, very trendy topic. And this combination between AI and HR is very interesting. So I'm very, very curious about this conversation. And he also shared more about job market disruptions caused by AI and his vision of AI future role in the HR industry over the next decade. So excited. And what does it mean to be a Latino for you?
You know, I've thought about this question, and to be completely fair, I don't think most people in Argentina identify themselves as Latinos. And I think it's a miss for most people in Argentina. It's only one thing that you realize once you get out of Argentina and you start to run into people who share more with you than the people in whatever country you moved into. I have a theory about that. And I think it's not just about being Latino. It's about being having this Mediterranean culture that we see as Latino because we got it, at least in Argentina, we got it from Italians and we got it from Spanish. In the Mediterranean culture, for thousands of years, people around the Mediterranean have been communicating with each other, conversing with each other, contacting with each other, and creating a very hybrid culture. So you would find a lot of common places in the culture in the south of Spain, in Italy, in Greece, in Turkey, and maybe in Morocco. There's a lot of common things in culture. But if you think about when you saw a boat coming into your village, into your port in the Mediterranean, it's like, okay, somebody I can sell something to, I can buy something from, I can communicate with. But if you think of the northern part of Europe, if you saw a boat coming into your port, it's like, oh, the Vikings, hide, run away. So maybe they were more trying to isolate themselves, and the people in the Mediterranean were more trying to bring others in. There was all this culture of being nice. There was this protocol for being nice to foreigners that created this context. They call it like a ritualized friendship. So maybe that's where it comes from, the Latino community, the fact that you feel at home with other Latinos, wherever you are in the world. If you're from Argentina, from Brazil, from Mexico, you feel closer.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an interesting point of view. And also, it might come from the fact that when you leave your country, you want to belong, right? You need to find ways to belong. And I think one of the ways is to find your community, find your Latino community. I think it's something that definitely helps too. And I want to dive a little bit deeper into artificial intelligence and AI. I think this is an incredible combination. So I wanted to ask you, how has AI influenced and transformed various HR processes in recent years? Can you give us an overview?
You know, artificial intelligence is extremely useful on all those fields where you have a lot of information to process, because artificial intelligence is extremely good at that. So naturally, in the spaces where HR in particular generates a lot of data, that's when artificial intelligence first got used. So with things like recruitment and sourcing of candidates, that was probably one of the first implementations of artificial intelligence in being able to process and understand whether a candidate is a fit for the position, if a lead that you could source from a big database of candidates could be a good fit. So that's one thing that definitely was one of the first implementations of AI in HR. The other one is people analytics and the ability to read into the trends that you can see in the data of your organization so that you can anticipate some of the events, see patterns, see trends and anticipate them so that you can do a more efficient use of your resources. You can anticipate that you're going to need more people with this profile, or you can anticipate that at certain point in the career, somebody's going to be looking for a change. And maybe if you can anticipate that, you can avoid having attrition, because basically you're driving the growth and not just working against the growth of the employee. So I think those are two very important components of AI in HR. And then naturally came all these later, more of a latest revolution in HR and AI that have to do with bots and communicating with employees and with candidates in a way that pretends to be human driven. I think it also has a big impact on things like understanding how employees feel, the track engagement, and also drive engagement through nudges and things like that. So definitely there's a lot of impact because HR generates a lot of data within an organization. And so AI is a great partner for HR.
Yeah. Thank you for the overview. This is great because I feel we are all talking about AI mostly for the previous years. Based on what you were saying, there's an use of AI in HR for a couple of years already. So maybe we didn't have this realization to like the sourcing process, like analyzing the skills and the experience of an employee who is applying for a job. This is done by AI for a couple of years, right? So this is interesting thing to highlight as well, because I feel like now we are all talking about it, mostly about the bad. Mm-hmm. I think you mentioned like a lot of interesting things using AI to understand more about the employee when they might consider a change in their career or when it's like a good moment for them, maybe to get a promotion or like to keep track of those things. It's very important. So I had no idea about that. So I guess I learned something new that it's very interesting.
Yeah. And now it's been used a lot for skills driven organizations where suddenly companies are starting to decompose the traditional job descriptions into, okay, what are the skills that are needed for this job? And with that, they are being able to look into their own skill sets inventory in their own employees and understand, well, maybe we have this skill set inside our team and we can find the candidate that we need. And that person is already in our organization, which means it's going to be easier to acquire. That person already knows the organization. We already know that person. And we are going to be giving that person the opportunity to grow into a different role within the organization. So it's a win-win when you look at that. And especially when you have companies that have that are in very specialized industries that you would have a tough learning curve for getting into the industry. So if you have a product manager in one industry, yes, they will know everything about product management, but maybe there are some particularities of your industry that are different. And if you are maybe somebody who is in a sales role or in a customer support role within your organization, could become an associate product manager or a junior product manager faster than bringing somebody from outside.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And one thing that I bet a lot of people might be thinking, so I want to ask you, how can HR professionals embrace AI while ensuring a human-centric approach to employee experiences? I guess, like, how we can combine all those amazing things you can do with AI in terms of, like, getting insights and working faster and a lot of the things you discuss, but, like, bringing the human aspect of it. I think this would be our challenge for like any role, anything we are doing.
Yeah, definitely. That is a challenge. And the first thing with anything, it starts with educating yourself. Any HR professional should start to educate themselves on how to use the tools, but especially on understanding that they should not abdicate to the tools. They are tools. They are not something that you can just say, do the work for you. They're going to do work as directed and as curated by you. I coined a slogan. I have a background in creative advertising. I have my way with words and like to find slogans and puns and things like that. And came up with one last night. AI is reasonable, not rational. So the results that you get are reasonable. They sound like they are okay, but there's no rational approach. There's no rational process behind them. So you have to provide that. It's not going to provide that. So you need to work with AI, and that requires learning how to use the tools, learning how to use some other tools that are being used for HR, like Python, for example. There was a recent announcement by Microsoft that they are bringing Python into Excel. So that will bring something that you can learn into something that you already know. If you're an HR professional, you work with many spreadsheets. And so that is one opportunity to learn something new. And also, there's so many tools that you can just bring in and use. So many low-code, no-code tools that you can use to help build some of the things that normally in HR, you would have to either rely on your IT department or wait for budget to buy the tool already made. And now it's an opportunity for you to say, okay, I'm going to build the tools that I need, not the ones that the market wants to impose on me. I want to build something that is custom. And with the help of AI and with the help of many other tools that are available, now you can do it.
Yeah, that's incredible. I feel this is really, really exciting thing. And I wanted to ask you another thing that I feel it's very important as well to be discussed. Have you observed any potential biases or challenges that AI could introduce in HR decision making and how they are being addressed? I think one thing that comes to my mind that I see people talking, and personally, like maybe for both of us who have like different names, at least in the United States, it's something that people quite often talk. I see some people like adopting more American names and to make this process not exactly when they are looking for a job, but like for other reasons. But I think it's something that can be impacted, right? If you see a resume with a name of like John rather than Thaisa, that you're like, what? What is this?
Yeah, definitely. There's been a lot of work done on making resumes more anonymous so that there's not so much bias brought into the process of evaluating the resumes. There's a lot of experiments that have been done with black sounding resume that they got much less interest from hiring managers. And there's so many other things that AI can be used to anonymize things from the name, the age, which is also a problem when assessing candidates. The school that they went to, for more and more companies are trying to just not care about what school they went to, because the school that somebody went to is already a source of bias. Like if you have a school where only a minority of the graduates belong to a certain group, of course, if you are always hiring people who went to those schools, you will not have a diverse workforce. You will not have a diverse pool of candidates. So definitely AI can be used a lot for that. It can also be used for things like translations. There was an interesting announcement a couple of days ago from Facebook regarding they released a model for translations that I tried this morning with my son. It works really well. And imagine how much that can help integrating people that speak different languages, but also how much it can help with people with disabilities. These type of solutions can enable other people to join the conversation that otherwise would not have been able to be part of it. So AI is helping us a lot in many different fronts. And again, it is a tool and you should not abdicate to the tool. Be mindful of the bias that you are introducing as well, and be careful of curating the results. And I think that's one of the problems with AI, the observability of what information was used to train this AI, right? Because if there's bias in the information that was used, then of course the result is going to be biased. I did an experiment a while ago with some of these tools that have to do with image generation tools. And I play with Midjourney and a few others, and Leonardo and DALL-E and others. And if you say, give me a picture of a doctor, you will normally get a white male. And if you say, give me a picture of a blue collar worker, it's probably not going to be white. And if you give a picture of a nurse, it's going to be a woman. So that is something that has already been introduced to many of the models because they are trained on the existing biased information. So that's definitely something that you need to keep an eye for so that you can overcome that bias by careful prompting and curating of the information of the output that you get.
Yeah, absolutely. And personally, I really like to have those conversations so everyone is aware of that. And as you were talking about it, one thing that always comes to my mind is that this is another data point for us to the fact that we need diverse people working with AI. We need people of color, we need Latinx folks being part of those conversations and influencing that, because I feel we are so behind. And it's very sad because the technology from one side is just like, it's moving so fast, it's improving and it's doing a lot of cool things. But when you think about the biases, it's just like reproducing what we have, or even sometimes it feels making worse what we already have in our society, which is so sad. So because of that, I feel it's so important to continue talking about that and also encouraging diverse people to be part of those projects, to work with the AI, to be part of the conversations, because I think this is the only way to change.
Yeah, and also to be part of those conversations at all levels, not just at the level of, okay, I have checked this box of having this number of people of this group in my organization. I'm a avid mentor and I mentor on a few platforms, and I got in touch with somebody from Kenya, Rachel, and she told me a story because she used to work for the company. Remember that a while ago, there was this company that in Kenya that did the content moderation for Meta, and the Meta outsourced to this company the content moderation, and the people who did that content moderation had to be looking at horrible content every day, all day, without any kind of psychological support. And that doesn't count as diversity if you are outsourcing the worst job in your company or in your product to Africa. That doesn't really meet the mark. What matters is that people are involved, different groups and different perspectives are involved at all levels, from the design, the ideation, the implementation, and of course, the moderation. But you need to include that diversity at all levels.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a very important point, because I feel sometimes the companies, they just want to check a box. But when you look at like the leadership, they're still like white males. And it's just, this is not okay. And it's interesting when we think about, I'm going to talk about Latinx just because this is the focus of our podcast and what the folks we talk with. But if you think about the numbers, we are less than 3% of folks who work in tech, around 26% of the population already, which is insane, and less than 3%. And when you think about leadership positions, managers, I have been interviewing a lot of like C-levels in the season now, and it's just like they're unicorns. They almost don't exist, because it's just like, if you think, oh, overall is 3%, leadership position is not even one. It's like 0. Like, I don't have those numbers, but I guess it's just like, it's so, so low, and it's hard. And you're right, because sometimes you are part of the conversation, but you don't have the power to make changes, because the leader, it's not someone who look like you or even understand your point. So how are we going to make changes, right? It's just so challenging.
Yeah, I think it's also about understanding where are the role figures, the aspirational models that you can look at. And when the aspirational models of a certain group are typecasted as, if you are a Latino, you're a musician, right? Or you're a football player, and I refuse to say soccer, football player. If that's how society sees you as a young person, that is going to be my aspirational model. That's what I want to become. There's nothing wrong with being a football player or being a musician. Those are only a couple of things that you could be. So it's about inspiring people to be more, to be other things. And sometimes that comes with understanding that even these people who became famous because they are athletes or because they are musicians, they are also very smart from a business side of things. And they have been able to build pretty much an empire using their own brand, their own image, and they are aspirational models. Like, take the example of the biggest Argentinian name in recent history, Lionel Messi. Now he's in the US, everybody gets crazy about him. Everybody wants to know more about him, wants to understand more about this. Everybody's becoming a fan of Messi today. But some of the biggest things that Messi has done are not necessarily in playing football. The deal that he got when he joined Inter Miami was very smart. He got a part on Apple TV subscriptions that were doubled because of him joining the MLS. He got a part of the deal on the sports kits and the t-shirts from Adidas. So that's very smart business. And that is also something that you can be as a Latino, not just the football player. You can be the businessman that makes those deals possible. So I think that inspiring people by showing them all the possible future selves they can be, that's essential to change that.
I love that. And I think you started to answer my next question too. So I'm very excited about this one as well. So I wanted to ask you, what are the potential job market disruptions caused by AI in HR, and how can professionals prepare for these changes? I think you started to talk about like acquire those business knowledge. I think this is something that we all should be doing in like any role, like be more comfortable about the business side of the things and talking about business and linking the business side of the house, the business goals to whatever you're doing, being design, HR, project manager, like anything. So yeah, I wanted to hear your thoughts about it.
Yeah, I think becoming data literate is something that in today's world is essential. For any role that you take, that you want to be successful, you want to grow and work in a big company, data literacy is essential, because you need to understand the information that you're working with. You need to be able to understand and tell your own story with data, so that you don't have to rely on the story that others tell you. Because every picture that you take of data is going to be somewhat biased. Every time that you frame reality, you're introducing some kind of bias. But by being data literate, you can build your own frame. You can be clear about what is your own frame, or you can understand the frame that others bring into it. So to me, that's something essential that everybody needs to add to their toolbox, so that they can be prepared for what's coming with AI. As regards changes that are being, like transformation that AI is bringing in, there was a very interesting article by a chief decision scientist at Google. Her name is Cassie Kozierkov. She's great. She has great content. She has a video called Making Friends with Machine Learning. That is a video that was created originally internally for Google, but now it's open. Everybody can watch it. It's like, I think it's like 8 hours worth of content where she explained many concepts of AI and machine learning in easy to understand way. She had this article that she published a couple of weeks ago, and she made the differentiation between thinking and thunking. That word thunk is that repetitive, boring type of work that can be easily automated. So her point was thinking is not going away. Thunking is. So a lot of the work that today we do that is boring, that can be easily automated, that you find yourself doing it in a very repetitive way, it's unexciting. That part, somebody is going to find a way to automate. I hope it's you, but somebody's going to find a way to automate. So if you base your ability to create value on the volume of repetitive tasks that you can do, your job is at risk because AI is going to be more efficient than you on that. Now, that's why you need to move yourself to a position where most of your work is done through thinking, not through thunking.
I wanted to share with you a podcast called DTC Pod. It's all about direct-to-consumer DTC world, and I've been loving it, and I thought you were going to like it as well. Ramon and Blaine are the hosts. And they do it as part of the HubSpot podcast network, where they cover everything you need to know about running an online store or a DTC brand. In DTC Pod, Ramon and Blaine chat with founders, marketers, platform folks, content creators, and marketing agencies. They get into building your brand, nailing social media, working with influencers, making your website convert better, rocking Facebook ads, keeping up with consumer trends, and sending emails that actually work. If you are into the stories behind your favorite brands, or you are in the DTC and D2C game, or just curious about it, this podcast is right up your alley. You will pick up some interesting insights for sure, and I'd love for you to hear and share with me what your thoughts are. How do you envision AI's role evolving in the HR industry in the next decade? How do you see that? I'd love to get your thoughts.
Well, we talked about before that AI is really good at managing data. AI is really good at doing repetitive things without getting bored, without making mistakes. And AI is getting better at doing things that seem human enough. In some of the bots, they are becoming increasingly easier to talk to the point that for some it might be confusing, but I think that it's an exciting way of, for example, I love to use ChatGPT, or especially I love Pi, a tool from Inflection, to do brainstorming, because it's a great way to put your thoughts a little bit out without necessarily going and talking in a big forum. You are putting your thoughts out there. Sometimes if you do it through an audio interface, you can hear yourself talking, and you know that you learn a lot about what you're trying to do when you hear yourself, when you're explaining it to somebody else. So you could use AI for that, and that could be transformational, because really you are using the tool as an extension of yourself. You could be self-coaching by listening to yourself and talking to an artificial intelligence. So I think in that perspective, HR is going to be able to benefit from implementing AI. I think that, of course, the challenge is to be careful on the things that you let AI do versus the things that a human has to do. And also, I think HR in particular could have a very predominant role in one thing that is essential for the success of AI, the relationship between AI and humankind. And that has to do with the ethics of AI, how it's used. We talked about bias. Who is better prepared to talk about bias than HR? In the organization in general, HR is usually way more prepared to talk about bias. And so that puts HR in a privileged position to join that discussion and to kind of like take the lead on how AI is implemented within the organization, instead of just waiting on the side and letting marketing or business or engineering take the lead. Here, HR can join that conversation and really mark the path for how AI is going to be used within the organizations.
That's really cool. I have a personal question to ask you. Do you think in 10 years we still have resumes?
I think not. I think probably the runway for resumes should be shorter than that. Let's begin by saying we already knew that resumes are a poor proxy for the value of a candidate. That's something that everybody already knows, but they are convenient. They're a convenience for both the applicants and for the recruiters to say, okay, if you write something in this format, you're going to be a good candidate. Honestly, today, both the resumes and the cover letters, you can go to ChatGPT and get ChatGPT to clean that up for you. And so does it mean that you're a good candidate because you were able to wisely use ChatGPT? No, I think not only resumes are kind of like phasing out. I think job descriptions are phasing out because of what I mentioned before about skills-based organization. If you look at your job description at any job and you look at what you did every day, you would realize that there's discrepancies between what your job said that you should be doing and what you were actually doing and how it was really described. So sometimes it's those underlying skills, the ones that allow you to be successful, not what it says in the job description. So I think job descriptions are also going to be less and less used. I think there's other tools that go more to the granular skills that allow you to assess the granular skills. And those are going to be better proxies for the value that somebody can bring to a job.
That's so interesting. I'm loving this conversation. And I want to ask you about the resources. Which resource helped you in your journey? I'd love to hear from you. Anything you want to highlight, and we are going to link to the descriptions of the episode, everything you are sharing with us.
Sure. Especially in the last couple of years, I've been doing a lot of reading. And so there's many books out there that can add a new perspective to what you're doing. I like books that are about product management because I feel that there's a lot of overlapping between product management and a lot that HR can learn from product management. And so the books by Marty Kagan, Inspired and Empowered, these are great books to read. I like books about entrepreneurship. And there's this one book by Peter Thiel called 0 to 1 that it has so much condensed wisdom. There's so many phrases of that book that I would just print on a t-shirt and wear it. And I also like books about human behavior because I think that's the passion that got me in the intersection between technology and talent. It's understanding human behavior and amplifying that through technology. One excellent book about that is Predictably Rational by Dan Ariely. Excellent book about understanding why you do some of the things that you do. Related to that is Why We Do the Things We Do, or something like that. It's a book by Dr. Edward Deci. He's the creator of the self-determination theory. It's one of the prevailing theories about what motivates us and how intrinsic motivation is created. And the author argues that the intrinsic motivation is the only one true motivation that you can achieve. Anything that is extrinsic disappears as long as the external influence, the external force disappears. So you can threaten somebody to do something, but once the threat goes away, the motivation disappears. But when you have intrinsic motivation, it is sustainable and it's long-term and it's healthier. So I think those are some of the best books that I've read recently. Also, I loved Atlas of the Heart.
Yes, I love Brené Brown. We love to talk about Brené Brown. That's incredible.
I love that book because it allows anybody who reads it to put more accurate labels to what you're feeling. And being able to apply a label to that is what enables a discussion. It's what enables understanding. If you cannot name something, you cannot truly understand it. You cannot define it. So that's another one. Never Split the Difference is also a book by Chris Voss. Also a very interesting book about negotiation because it talks about those situations where splitting the difference doesn't do it. This guy was I think it was FBI negotiator in hostage situations. Splitting the difference doesn't do it in those situations, right? So you need to understand where are the situations where splitting the difference doesn't work for either part, especially not for you. So you need to find other type of solutions that are not splitting the difference because that's not going to cut it. And there's a couple of books on HR that I would recommend to every HR practitioner. One would be Fierce Conversations by Susan Scott. That's a book about conversations that matter. If they matter, you need to go deep on those. Like if you're a manager and you need to provide feedback on poor performance, you need to do it in a way that provides information that is useful and that conveys the urgency of the feedback, of the change that needs to happen. If you don't do that, you're doing a disservice. And in that sense, that book complements it very well with another book called Radical Candor by another author, Kim Scott. They are not related as far as I know, but that's another book about being intentional in your feedback because you care about the person. Being on the quadrant of ruinous empathy, where you are not giving all the feedback that you could be giving because you're trying to protect the relationship. And in reality, you're only protecting yourself. You want to look as a nice person. Nice is not the same as kind.
Oh, yeah. You just dropped a bomb now. So, whoa, that's incredible. I love how you like books as well. I love books. And you mentioned a lot of books that I love. So I'm very excited with this conversation. And this reminds me of something. Maybe we should do a part two of this conversation, because I love when you talk about the intersection between HR and product management. So maybe we'll have a part two. So I'd love to dive deeper into that, because I feel this is a very, very important topic. And I wanted to thank you for your time, Adnan. That was a really, really good conversation. I want to leave the last minutes for you to share anything you want to share, and also where people can find you.
Sure, thank you. Yeah, definitely. I would love the second conversation about this, because I think it's very important, and so much so that it's one of my main things today. I'm writing a newsletter called Productize HR. It's on Substack, but you can get it to productizehr.com. In that newsletter, I try to tackle these topics of product management, HR, technology, agility, because I think that there's a lot of common ground there and a lot of things that HR can learn from product management. And the other place where people can find me is on LinkedIn. I don't think there's too many Hernan Chiosos out there. I'm always open to connecting. I'm also a member of one group that is called Latinx Professionals. I'm a board member there. And the other place where you can find me is on ADP List. I like to do mentoring. To me, it's great to give back to the community. And at the same time, it gives me so much, because it gives me opportunities to have conversations with people from all around the world that in my normal day-to-day, I would never be able to get that insight. I always tell this story about talking to this designer, a woman designer from Iran, at the moment when women were demonstrating because of human rights issues in Iran. And I was talking to her, and I remember having to cancel one of the meetings because she was feeling unsafe. And so she didn't want to have a mentoring session at the time. And those are things that by doing mentoring, especially with a global audience, you can go to the source and not just follow what the media tells you. It's you're connecting with people with different perspectives from all over the world, and you're learning so much about culture from that. And that's something that I love.
Yeah, that's incredible. Thank you for mentioning that. Like mentoring, it's incredible. And sometimes I think people don't realize how much we learn and how much we get inspired. We get a lot of insights, and those connections are like, they can last like forever. And that's incredible to have the sense where like you're helping someone, but at the same time, you're learning so much. And maybe after a while, they can help you and you can build this community. So I love that. And thank you so much for your time. I'm very excited about your episode. That was incredible.
Thank you. It was a pleasure for me.
That's it for today, everyone. Thank you so much for your time. I would love to hear your thoughts about the podcast and the episodes. Please message us with any insight, any feedback you might have, and also guest suggestions. Message us in your favorite social media platform. We are in all social platforms. And if you want to write us in a review, we will love that. Feel free to write us in a review on Apple Podcasts, Audible, Amazon, or any other streaming that you like. Thank you.